I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, when President Donald Trump took office for his second term, he quickly began his flood the zone strategy with 10 executive orders that upended immigration and ended support for asylum seekers. There have been widespread reports that Trump's efforts are terrifying the populations of at-risk migrants and legal non-residents with uncertain immigration status. Trump won the White House with disinformation about migrants. Remember when he claimed that migrants were eating the dogs and they're eating the cats? Of course, that's not true. And many people knew that. For the last 10 years, members of the San Antonio Interfaith Welcome Coalition have been rejecting the hate directed at migrants. The volunteers of the Interfaith Welcome Coalition have written a book about their experiences, Traveling Mercy's encounters with asylum seekers. We're going to hear those stories on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
From the Malou and Carlos Alvarez Theater in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. On this special Source, we're recording in front of a live audience, and we're going to be putting the element of humanity back in the conversation of immigration and helping the asylum seekers. Right now, the United States has shut down the programs that allow asylum seekers to enter and possibly resettle here. But there is now a mass deportation program underway that has the stated goal to expel millions of undocumented workers in the United States. And these were the policies of Donald Trump, who was elected president based on the misinformation about immigrants claiming that they were eating pets and that they were a drag on our economy. San Antonio has been in a position over the last decade as immigration heated up as a political issue that they were able to exploit. Here, though, there were people who welcomed the immigrants and who have been helping them along their way. One of those organizations has been the San Antonio-based Interfaith Welcome Coalition. Tonight, we're going to hear from them and about their experiences, their stories of providing assistance to the asylum seekers. The Interfaith Welcome Coalition has compiled a book of volunteers' experiences called Traveling Mercy's Encounters with Asylum Seekers. It was edited by Mary Grace Kettner. And Mary, welcome to The Source. It's good to have you.
Thank you.
Also with us tonight is Sister Denise LaRocque. She's daughter of charity of St. Vincent de Paul. She has also been at the forefront of helping migrants as they come to San Antonio. And Sister Denise, it's such an honor to have you with us tonight.
Thank you. Thank you for the program also.
And we're joined by Jonathan Ryan. He's a local immigration attorney. He can answer some of the questions about the complex, changing, fluid situation with immigration. And Jonathan's welcome back to The Source.
Happy to be here, David.
And so we're going to be hearing stories, readings a little bit later from that book, Traveling Mercy's Encounters with Asylum Seekers. But first, Mary Grace Kettner, explain how this book came about. How did these encounters happen? Where and what was all that about?
Well, you know, we always have told each other stories of something interesting that happened with one of the immigrants that we saw. But I had loved those stories. Well, in 2020, when COVID happened, we couldn't send our volunteers to the bus station or the airport anymore. And so we were trying to find ways that we could hold on to these wonderful people. We knew it was going to be over at some point, and we would want our volunteers to be able to come back. And we started a newsletter, and one of the things we wanted to do in the newsletter was to get people to share those stories that had been so inspirational to them. And sometimes it was like pulling hen's teeth to get people to write it down. But we do have now a collection in the book of 71 stories by 31 different volunteers. And as one writer said, this work is heartbreaking, but it also heals your heart.
Right. So the interesting point about the book is how the giving, the helping, the charity that's involved in helping these people who are in probably one of their greatest times of need, most vulnerable, how rewarding that has been and how it paid so many dividends to the individuals who were helping out.
Yes, almost every writer mentioned something at some point in their story or in one of their stories about how gratifying it is. And one of our authors called those God moments, when it just seems like you're feeling a transformation within yourself.
Sister Denise, if you could tell us about, and I've been with you in some of these locations and done stories with you at the bus station, and when we've seen massive amounts, like, you know, hundreds of people coming through, released from detention. And
we crossed the border that day.
We went across the border. Mm-hmm. We went to a place where refugees were having to hide from the cartels, mm-hmm. While they were trying to get into the United States, families that were huddled, trying to work together, stay together. Talk about like what you have been doing. I mean, how have you been out there helping these people?
Recently?
Well, okay, recently, yeah.
I think we've seen quite a change since the numbers exploded again. So that was a very different dynamic. And I've been at the Migrant Resource Center, Centro de Bienvenida, as a volunteer, where Catholic Charities in the city have been running the center, which recently closed for lack of people being able to cross now. I've been doing activities with the children, helping serve in whatever way there. I'm trying to bring the children to a more normal space after the trauma of their travels, helping them to unwind, and sometimes just the things that they withdraw would be heartbreaking. But I've also been in advocacy groups and things like that, because the whole dynamic is changing, so we need to change how we respond also.
Right, and we're going to talk about that quite a bit, what people still can do mm-hmm. in our community to help out. Jonathan, Ryan, I've got a couple of minutes before you have to hit break, but as an immigration attorney and a person who is specialized in this area, is there what's happening with the law?
I think that's a great way to start, because I think it's important, and people might not realize this. There has been no change to immigration law under this administration. In fact, there has been almost no changes to the immigration laws in the past 20 plus years. The executive branch and the president has a certain amount of power over the policies and the administration of immigration law as the chief executive, the boss, in a sense, of all of the immigration officers in the country. What we've seen under this president is that there have been executive changes made, in some cases rolling back provisions and protections that were provided by the previous president, in some cases trying to enhance the enforcement powers of the immigration enforcement officers. But in other cases, we've seen that this president has overplayed his hand. We can point to the attempt to remove birthright citizenship as a clear example of an executive order that was clearly unconstitutional. And this really gets to the central point, that the motivation here with the current administration is to send messages. This is a public relations campaign that is couched in law, and it serves the purpose of causing fear in immigrant communities, trying to deter immigrants from coming to this country to begin with, trying to also cause confusion among the population of citizens and residents about our country's history as a nation of immigrants, our posture, our important place in the world in terms of immigration. And of course, trying to enhance the power of the executives. In that sense, this is just one part of a broader assault of this administration against the Congress, because it is the Congress that can change immigration law. And in the absence of their action, the president is taking advantage of the situation.
So there's pushback in the courts right now, and there could be a reset. We could go back to the law as it is written, as it has been known. And so
it's very possible they're engaging in the move fast and break things policy, and they're kind of letting people push them back. And that's what we have to do. We have to push back.
All right. So we got to take a break here. When we come back from this break, we're going to hear stories of the contributors to the book Traveling Mercies: Encounters with Asylum Seekers. This is a special edition of The Source. We're calling it The Source Malu because we're having it in the Malu and Carlos Alvarez Theater. And we're going to take a 1 minute break and we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. This is a live source, Source Malou, as we're calling it, but it's taking place in the Malou and Carlos Alvarez Theater at the TPR headquarters downtown. We're having a conversation about what's happening now with immigration, but also we're hearing the stories of the people who helped asylum seekers over the last 10 years with the Interfaith Welcome Coalition. They have put together a book called Traveling Mercies, Encounters with Asylum Seekers. And we're now, and the editor has been Mary Grace Kettner, and you're going to introduce some of the stories. People are going to read their own stories.
Yes. And our first story is by Don
Silvius.
My good friend Don is going to read her story. Don, tell us your story about your cigarette safari.
It's called Building Bridges. One Sunday, Saturday morning, I went to the bus station to deliver a load of fresh lunches. Six or eight migrating moms with as many children were waiting on the benches while several IWC volunteers explained their tickets and prepared them for the last stretch of their challenging journeys. One of the volunteers told me that two moms had just walked out of the bus station. They're looking for a place to buy cigarettes. Can you catch up with them and guide them to Walgreens? Sure. I looked up the street and I saw them right away. They had a little one with them, so they were walking slowly. I caught up, introduced myself, and joined in the conversation with my elementary Spanish. We go left here, straight here. There it is. I was touched by the obvious deep friendship between the two women. Both of them were shepherding the little boy who was with them. Like any five-year-old, he was a challenge to walk with, and they were working together to keep him headed in the right direction and on the sidewalk. I wondered if perhaps they were from the same home community, maybe even sisters, who had been making this long journey together. We got to the shop, took our place in line, and when it was our turn, we asked for cigarettes. Uh-oh, no ID. They hadn't brought their detention center name tags. I had left my wallet in my car. No transaction without ID. Well, no worries. The clerk invited us to return with ID. On the walk back, I asked about their destination. We talked in simple phrases about that for a few minutes. They were headed to different places. I asked where they were from. Honduras, said one. And then the other said, Romania. Romania. In that moment, I caught a glimpse of the breadth of the gaps that these women were reaching across. Friendship forged across a language gap, a cultural gap, a practical gap. They were good at it. They were reaching across a sizable gap as they walked and talked with me. Conversation continued as we made the return trip, ID in hand, and they shared a bit more of their stories, separate, desperate journeys that had come together only 2 months before in the detention camp. It made me think of bridges, structures that combine solid strength with necessary flexibility in order to carry a load. So many bridges, seen and unseen, are being built continually by the courageous people who migrate.
Thank you, my friend Don Silvius.
All right, next.
Katie. Katie Myers is presently our chair of our board of directors, and she also serves on several committees of people along the border, so that we can keep each other most efficient and helpful that we can be. Katie, tell us your story about the man you met in the park.
Welcoming the Sojourner. It's about 9:30 p.m., and a gusty wind has finally chased away the sweltering heat. We're standing in a park in the middle of downtown San Antonio, waiting for the last bus to the airport. The man behind me gestures and asks unexpectedly, "What denomination of church is that?" "Metodista," I reply. "Yo soy Metodista," he exclaims, and told me he was a missionary back in Cuba. He eagerly whips out his phone to share photos of his congregation gathered outdoors on wooden benches. The journey has been long, he shares, but finally he has almost reached his destination, his daughter in Florida. And 30 minutes prior, the only thing standing between him and home was the cost of bus fare to the airport. And then he met a stranger in a park with baggies in her pocket, containing $1.30 in change, exactly what he needed. "The trip has been like this," he says. "Misericordia, Dios es bueno." Mercy, God is good. In the years that I've volunteered with the Interfaith Welcome Coalition, greeting migrants as they journey through our city, I've learned that no matter what gifts I offer to people, I am blessed far more by them. And I don't mean that in an inspirational quote on a coffee mug kind of way. I mean blessed by an encounter with the divine. These folks are often apologetic that they have no material way to repay me for the sandwich, or the map, or the phone call, or the bus fare. And so they call down God's blessing upon me and my children and upon those I love. Dios le pague. God will pay you. These prayers are benedictions of exquisite and heartfelt eloquence. In the presence of such riches, I'm humbled by my own paltry offerings. And like Abraham, I'm aware that God is here in the presence of these strangers. And through the reciprocity that defines God's kingdom, I think perhaps they feel the same way about me. The Cuban man, the Methodist missionary, asks me to pray for him before he leaves. I tell him a bit awkwardly that I'm not sure my Spanish is up to the task, and would it be okay to pray in English? He says, "Of course." And so I prayed for his safe journey and joyful reunion with his daughter and for his well-being. "Alleluia," he said. "Amen." Then he shouldered his backpack and disappeared across the park, heading for the bus stop.
Thank you, Katie Myers.
Okay.
Robin Raquet is a librarian, and she's recently archived materials for the Polish Culture Center in Panna Maria, some earlier immigrants than these. Well, Robin, tell us your story about Maria.
I will. Mary Grace called me to see if I might be able to assist her and accompanying a young mother to a Planned Parenthood appointment. What seemed like a fairly straightforward request turned into something much more meaningful for me. The young woman, with her two children, were guests at a private residence in Kerrville, an hour west of us, and we were to pick her up there. Mary Grace thought it would be good to have a fluent Spanish speaker along for the trip, so I was glad to go. When we got there, we saw that the little family were quite relaxed and comfortable in their temporary lodging with Ellen. The two grade schoolers had just finished breakfast and were playing in the living room, and they didn't seem worried about bidding their mother goodbye for a time. Maria was from El Salvador, so she and I chatted about her home country, because I had been on a mission trip there with CRISPAS, Christians for Peace in El Salvador, and International Habitat for Humanity. On the way back to San Antonio, she talked about the long, arduous journey on foot, rarely by bus, that took months to accomplish, about the scarcity of food, clothing, shelter, and warmth, and of course, total absence of security. Her desperate trip was necessitated by the murdering of her brother and others by gangs. She had a small store, a pulquerias, making ends meet, but even after she paid protection money, the gangs eventually drove her out, threatening her death also. She was able to pay someone for safe passage, which simply turned out to be going from one flop house to another and getting robbed and raped in the process. By the time we met her, Raices and their legal aid had found her, realized that she was pregnant, and arranged for her appointment. We took her to the San Antonio Clinic and stayed there waiting. When she came out carrying only a small bag and a sheet of instructions, she was remarkably unemotional on the surface, but seemed so relieved to see us. We all hugged, and she was cheerful and even talkative on the way back to Kerrville for a happy reunion with her children. Mary Grace and I left for San Antonio, and I feel so grateful to have shared this crucial time with a wonderful young woman. Now we knew what the term accompaniment really meant in depth. Of course, Madea had miles to go in front of her to her next stop on the search for asylum. I have often wondered how she fared.
So we're going to get to a break here. When we come back from the break, we'll hear more stories, one more story. But these are incredible stories. And one thing I like about them, of course, is it shows that people may think, I want to help. I want to reach out. I want to do this type of work. But I don't think I'm qualified. My Spanish is no good, or I feel overwhelmed. But we're hearing that all you need is the decision. Make the decision that you can help, and you can do that type of work, can't you?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And so, and it is about decisions. You can decide, are you going to be part of the cruelty that the present administration is bringing about? Or are you going to be part, make the decision to embrace the humanity and be part of a process? And you can, there's still room for kindness and humanity and Christian values, and just not even Christian values, but just humanity values, you know, in a ways to provide these levels of support. Can you just, any response to that?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I sometimes wonder if the people who tell stories that are different from ours have ever actually met an asylum seeker. I suspect they have not. And we've been meeting asylum seekers for 10 years. We think our stories are the true stories.
And these are, they're you know, the demonization that we've seen, the dehumanization that we've seen, that we've heard about. Do you think that is that why you put the book together? Do you think the book will have legs and other people who have never been in these experiences will?
That certainly was part of what spurred me to say these stories need to get out. We're hearing all the wrong things about asylum seekers, but we know the truth. We've met them.
And so, to be clear, the book, it was for sale at the Twig here in San Antonio, but it's been sold out. It is available. You can order it on Amazon.
That's true. They have it in both Kindle and regular book form. And however you purchase it, you'll be helping with this. All the royalties and go to the Interfaith Welcome Coalition.
Okay, so we're taking a break. It's a two-minute break. We're going to come back. We're going to hear another story from the collection. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio, hearing the Traveling Mercies, Encounters with Asylum Seekers. And then we'll continue our panel discussion, and we will have questions from the audience about what's happening with asylum seekers, refugees, and immigrants who are at risk. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're having a conversation about immigration, working with the migrants as they come into San Antonio, which is what the Interfaith Welcome Coalition has done for the last 10 years. Of course, immigration has changed a lot since the inauguration of Donald Trump, but the law is still the law. We're going to hear more about that in just a few minutes. But right now we're hearing stories, select stories from their the book, Traveling Mercies, Encounters with Asylum Seekers. And Mary Grace, you're the editor of that. Can you introduce the next storyteller?
Yes, this is Michelle Rumbo. And she's a prolific writer. She had her own journal entries, kept her own journal entries, and she was recently able to present them at the Global at a global conference in Salzburg, Austria. And we were lucky enough to get a couple of her stories too. Michelle, tell us about the Venezuelan family that you met.
Angel, the news continues to be filled with stories of invasions and bloodbaths at the border. But at the bus station, it's quiet and calm. The travelers I meet tell me that the Mexican government is capably holding back migrants from crossing the Rio Grande, and that the processing stations on our side of the border are not at all full. Yesterday, I met a lovely family from Venezuela, one of a handful who made it to San Antonio on Friday. Angel is the father's name, which I found to be appropriate the more I got to know about him. He's probably in his early 30s, wearing a crisp, clean shirt, freshly shorn haircut, big smile, two front teeth a bit crooked, and broad shoulders. Like him, his wife is in good spirits, but nothing compared to their 5-year-old bubbly daughter, who's watching her silhouette dancing and hopping in the reflection of the Coke machine. The 13-year-old daughter is also neatly dressed and has long, cascading dark curls. All their possessions are packed away in two small rolling carry-on bags. Unusual luggage compared to most of the immigrants we see who are just carrying a bag or a backpack. I learned that they left Venezuela last September, 7 months ago, trekking 3 days through the Darien Gap. Just that morning, I had read in the New York Times about the increase in sexual assaults in the jungle, the primitive, dense stretch of rainforest connecting South and Central America. I showed concern about how his family fared through that passageway. He responded that while it was awful, he had carried his little girl in his arms the whole time, and told his daughters that they were going on a big adventure. Somehow, a dome of protection covered this family during their whole trip. Somehow, the Darien Gap was now only a passing memory. Somehow, they had managed to escape the worst of the trauma that often occurs here. His positive attitude seemed to be the foundation of their good luck. They had sold their house in Venezuela to make the journey, and the funds were partly used and partly extorted from them during the journey. They were now nearly penniless when they arrived. They were penniless when they arrived to Matamoros, Mexico. There they had found a church where they had slept, and he found a job washing cars for a rich man. He noticed that the rich man had many guns, and he eventually realized he was working for the head of a cartel. He explained he did not go through all that they had gone through to leave Venezuela just to find themselves entwined with a drug lord. So he managed to leave that employment and started working on the sewage system for the city. That is what sustained the family for many months while they waited to be accepted for La Cita, their appointment with U.S. Immigration, as confirmed via phone app notification. Upon receiving that confirmation just days ago, they used the cash they had saved up to buy the two rolling bags, buy some basic clothes, and get haircuts for each member of the family. Once they crossed La Frontera, they applied for asylum and were randomly assigned to Chicago for their next court date. He told me that the girls' aunts had scrounged up the money to buy them tickets to Chicago. "Where will you live? What will you do there?" I asked Angel. He told me that he had heard of a refugee camp there and that he would find work. He was confident, happy, undaunted, and excited to begin the next chapter. He said he knew it would not be easy, but he was sure that the best was ahead. I watched the four of them line up for their first leg to Dallas, and I laughed at the little girl continuing to dance her way towards the bus. I thought, this is exactly the kind of family any country should want to be part of a positive, productive, self-reliant future.
Thank you, Michelle Rimbaud.
All right, so, and Mary Grace, you have a story that you're going to read. It's a short story.
I would love to read my story.
All right.
I call it an airport blessing. Weeks before, Carmen and her young teenage daughters, Genesis and Katie, had left El Salvador. As we backed out of the parking space at the Casa de María y Marta, Carmen asked if I was a pastora. Oh dear, I thought, if she thinks I'm a shepherdess, she's going to have trouble adjusting to this country. But she was way ahead of me. She thought I was a pastor, a mistake I still cherish. At the airport, what a lucky day we had. The shuttle was waiting for us in the parking garage, their tickets printed out like clockwork. The agent waved us right through the security section. We arrived at our gate early, and I was able to request a Spanish-speaking assistant for the little family at DFW, where they would change planes. Then I showed the girls how to check the departures list just in case. Carmen called her sister on my phone, babbling in lively Spanish. Then the girls each talked with their aunt. As Katie finished, she handed me the phone and said that her aunt wanted to talk to me. Oh no, I thought, Spanish is hard for me, especially on the phone. Hello, I said slowly in English, hoping to forewarn her. Then the woman spoke to me in perfect English. I cannot tell you how much it means to us that you are helping my sister get here, she said. We have waited and waited for this day, and we are so grateful that you are sending her to us. She went on and on with unrelenting generosity. You would have thought that I had tied on my cape, flown to El Salvador, lifted them up in my arms, and brought them here. She hardly took a breath, just poured out her heart. It was my pleasure, I tried to say, but she wouldn't stop for me to explain that it wasn't just me. My eyes were filling with tears, listening to her unrestrained gratitude, and my throat had tightened, so I wasn't sure I could speak at all. You're welcome, I said weakly, still trembling from the blessing of her words. Bye. But even my clumsy farewell could not spoil the sanctity of the encounter, the embrace of it. This family would do just fine in the U.S., with or without a pastora.
Great story. The thing about these stories, I wonder, they seem like they are documents from a time that's gone. I don't know if we're able to do this kind of work anymore. So I want to talk to Sister Denise LaRocque about how there is work that does continue. And we can make choices to participate in that. I'm not sure what that looks like. So what's out there? What can I do?
Right. And I think it's evolving, too, as things keep evolving with immigration. But I think the part that does not change is that people are in great need. And there's so many people who want to make a difference, who want to do something for others. And like you said, you know, knowing the language of the other person is not needed. There's so much communication that can come without that. there's so many places that people can do things locally in parishes, in food pantries, in social services. There's so many people in need, people who don't have their work permits yet, those who aren't far enough through the process yet. There's people who don't have papers yet. There's mixed families. There's so many people in need, and there's so many people, like all of the people in this room, who want to do something to make a difference. And I think that's what was the special thing about the Interfaith Welcome Coalition, because it was a lot of people. No one was experts at any of it, and we learned how to do things on the way. And it was the caring and the respect for the individuals that came across from us. It was relationships that we built, even though if it was such a little time, there's still people I'm in touch with that I met in fleeting moments at the bus station or other places. But there's so much we can do. There's so much we can do to contribute.
Right. So I need really...
Oh, you want ideas?
I need instruction.
Okay. I should have brought my list. So one is being sure people know their rights, that they have papers, you know, the cards and things to know their rights, when they're out and about, when they're at their house.
Who can I give some of my abundance? How do I share that? How do I get that to people who need it?
Where do you find people? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah.
We need to really get the local churches moving and get people out and about. There's coalitions of people. ILRC is working. SA Stands is working. Lots of people are working to... I've gone through my neighborhood in the burning sun. I've skipped the cold, passing those things out. Catholic Charities has legal clinics the end of each month at different churches where they can get free legal help.
Right. So we're going to talk more about what's happening on the legal side, and we can take questions from our audience and continue the conversation about what's happening with asylum seekers, refugees, migrants who are at risk here in San Antonio, how we can all make a choice in order to embrace the humanity of the situation. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're going to take a 1-minute break, and the conversation continues. Stay with us. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Hours after being sworn in, President Donald Trump began targeting migrants seeking refuge or asylum. He brought the entire refugee system to a halt, preventing resettlement of tens of thousands of already screened refugees by stopping the admission of thousands of Afghan refugees. He also ended humanitarian parole for immigrants from Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Venezuela, leaving more than 500,000 already here, living here in legal limbo. And he has, though, opened up the refugee process to Afrikaners, who are white Africans who he says are being persecuted in Africa. So that tells you something. But what is happening with our immigration system, with the asylum seekers or refugee system? Let's go to Jonathan Ryan. He has been really covering this and been an advocate. He's an immigration attorney. And so, Jonathan Ryan, let's talk about this Afrikaner situation. Why is that something that Donald Trump feels is the exception that he is providing to refugees?
I do not claim to know the mind of that man. I do know that his chief advisor is from South Africa, and so perhaps he has been turned on to this issue by people who are whispering or more than whispering in his ear and maybe putting money in his pocket. But I would actually take a step back from perhaps the thrust of your question and say, let's hold on to what matters to us here. This is a recognition by the president that refugees do exist. This is a recognition that the asylum laws, the international agreements that we've made matter. And so I think what we should do as advocates for that process is to seize that opportunity. And we probably need to make more connections to the wider population of people around the world who need asylum. And if the president does claim to believe that there are people on this earth who need asylum, who deserve to come to this country, let's take that as the first step and let's see where we can push the conversation in the direction that we're talking about here tonight, to protecting the most vulnerable people.
Sister Denise, Governor Greg Abbott got into a flame war with the Pope last week online, where the Pope said that we needed to rethink these harsh policies, immigration policies. And Governor Abbott fired back, saying that the Bible and Jesus, they were pro-strong borders.
I haven't found that reference yet.
You know, and so I do want to remind people that, you know, in the Gospel, Matthew, there is an account of the baby Jesus having to flee to Egypt right. to escape the murder of the innocents by Herod, King Herod. And when they went to Egypt, they were not met by barbed wire and a border wall. So, I mean, is that really the lesson from the scripture?
There is nothing I can find in scriptures. And I've done research into the other major faiths, and there's nothing that's anti-immigrant in it. It's all about welcoming the stranger, supporting other people, having compassion, helping others, being merciful. Nothing about the cruelty that has been occurring recently. And I think that, you know, Matthew 25 I like especially. And in it, it says specifically to welcome the stranger, clothe the naked. I think, you know, anyone who's Christian anyway can tell you what those different pieces are, visiting those in prison. That's the call. I mean, there's nothing, if you know the Christ figure at all, Jesus, even if it's biographical, there was nothing cruel or exclusive in him and who he was with. And I think we're called to follow that.
That's what they call woke Jesus.
Well, you know, that Bible's been around for a long time. And the word, the message hasn't changed. But the twisting of it, the twisting of the messages. And I think it's out of fear. What am I going to lose if these people come? What am I going to lose out on? What are they going to take from me?
Well, okay, so let's go to Mary Grace. Are they here to take? Did you see people who were here to take, or were they here to work and contribute?
I never saw any people like that. Did any of y'all see any people like that? I'm not getting any response.
That's not the impression.
That's not the impression.
And Jonathan Ryan, in the work that you've done, you know, what is, you know, why are people coming? You know, does it follow with the basic, the tradition, the law of asylum seekers that we have in the United States?
I think it's interesting, particularly in this day and time that we're seeing, in particular, a lot of the anti-immigrant sentiment revolving around people who came here seeking asylum from Venezuela. And as an immigration and refugee rights attorney, I find that particular example very interesting because, I mean, let's just take a look at Venezuela. This is a country that the current president supported a coup against the current leader of that country. Our nation does not recognize the legitimacy of the current president, who is an authoritarian strongman, Maduro in particular, who is known and documented to perpetrate violence, to have criminal gangs called colectivos working under his power and carrying out orders from his regime against any dissident, against anyone with a different opinion than him. You could not describe more perfectly the situation that our refugee and immigrant and asylum laws envisioned in terms of providing protection to people who have a political opinion, who are being persecuted in their home country. And I think it's noteworthy to see the backflips, how the bending over backwards that is happening rhetorically to speak ill of these people, to make the American people fearful of these people, when there are no people who more justly fit the definition of a refugee than Venezuelans coming to our country.
And it's a country that the United States has disrupted in the past.
We have disrupted this country. We've got a very sordid history of relationships with this country.
So talk about, as an immigration attorney, yesterday, Thursday, or Wednesday, the administration shut down support for unaccompanied minors. What happened?
So this is very near to my heart. For the last almost 17 years, I've been working to support unaccompanied minors in their legal process. I actually just started a nonprofit, Advocato, that was recently contracted under this program to provide legal services to children who had been detained at the border and then released to live here in the Bexar County area. And now we've seen that the stop order has told those lawyers, not just lawyers like me working with released children, but lawyers working inside of the detention centers for children, providing them information about their rights and representation should they be brought to court, have all been told to stop working. And I would just make a few very important points. One, we've heard people like the supposed border czar, the so-called border czar, Thomas Homan, say that he cares about children. That's his top priority. Well, if you care about children, you don't take away the lawyers from those children when they're in government custody facing deportation. I also think it's very, very noteworthy that everyone in this country was very angered in 2018 when it came to light that our government was separating families at the border. Well, who was it that brought that information to light to the American people? It was these very lawyers who were working in these very centers who brought that information out. Had it not been for this program, none of us, no one would have known that the government was separating families along the border. And so now, today, we see the same administration pulling the lawyers out of those very facilities. So I ask the question, what do we think is about to happen next?
Now, the issue, according to the Donald Trump and Holman, the border czar and other people.
Donald Trump, who I think probably paid more in his own legal defense than the price of that entire program to represent all children in the United States. Sorry.
Yes, but to on point here, they want strong borders, strong borders. And I think pretty much everyone wants strong borders in the United States. But the issue is not strong borders, Sister Denise. We can talk about how we can have strong borders without the cruelty. We can have immigration without the cruelty. We can do these things without having to if you wonder what you would be doing during the time of Anne Frank, now is the time to be asking yourself, what role do you want to play? And we can have strong borders. We can be America first and all that kind of stuff and be proud of our country, but do the right thing. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Right. And I think the issue is just these words that are just catchphrases that sound good, that allows people to say, okay, you know what you're doing. But if you look at the CBP One app, it was working it wasn't perfect, that's for sure. But people were waiting for their turns and they were waiting for their appointments. They were waiting 10 months and being, held for ransom and all this other stuff in the meantime in these terrible conditions, but they waited their turn. But yet that was destroyed. Not only did they end the program, they canceled all those appointments of people who had been waiting so long. And some who they were held for ransom and they were, while they were being held, they missed their appointments. They had to start all over again, but they waited. So there are humane ways to do things and to make them work. We don't have to be cruel just to try and chase people away and be ugly. And I think there's so much a piece of racism in there, because we hear about things against the brown and the black immigrants and refugees and not the others.
Sister Denise LaRocque, thank you so much. Jonathan Ryan and Mary Grace Kettner, thank you. The book is available online, Traveling Mercies, Encounters with Asylum Seekers. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening. We appreciate that.